What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It is a big adjustment. Pitchers are really good. There's no level past the big leagues. Like, that's it. Like, that's as good as it gets.
Here we go. It's Hot Sheet. It's Scotty Braun and Baseball America's J.J. Cooper and Ben Badler. It is a very, very busy show for you, including a special guest, Kobe Mayo from the Baltimore Orioles, is going to join us in about 10 minutes. So first off, just a couple orders of business. If you don't see this show every week, it will be back on a weekly basis on February 17th. Right now, we're just in every other week off-season mode, so that makes it even more loaded of a show when we're here. And then number two, and even more importantly, J.J. Cooper, Wednesday is a big day in the Baseball America world. What is it?
Top 100 day. So we will roll out the 2025 preseason top 100 prospects list. We'll give you a sneak peek that a guy that we're going to be talking about in a minute is going to appear pretty high up on that list. I think we can safely say that that we're going to be talking about one of our top prospects in all of baseball. But it'll be fun going through the full 100, all the analysis that goes with it, and we'll keep building off that, you know, for the next month, really, because, man, it's ranking season, and we love to rank prospects at Baseball America.
I think I know who you're talking about, so let's hit the first move. Meep, meep. Roki Sasaki has signed with the Dodgers. We learned about that a few days ago. Ben, we spoke to you actually on Foul Territory as well about the Roki possibilities, and he ended up going where everyone pretty much expected him to go. But we also want to take this time to compare him to the situation that Shohei Ohtani went through, whatever it was at this point, 7-ish years ago.
Yeah, in terms of the situation or him as a pitcher, I mean, yeah, I mean, the situation with Ohtani was different at that time because, you know, think back to, what was it, 2017. At that time, the international signing period started on July 2nd. Now it's January 15th. So when Ohtani signed, he wasn't sort of straddling the line between two signing periods the way that Sasaki was. And Sasaki was signing right now at the start of the start of the 2025 signing period. So when Ohtani came over, teams had already spent a lot of money, like officially signed contracts for international prospects. Whereas with Sasaki, there were a lot of players who had agreements in place that had to wait and just cause a lot of craziness and a lot of chaos over, throughout the international market. And with Sasaki too, with Ohtani at that time, you know, there was no DH in the National League, right? So that really, as a two-way player, what he wanted to do, not that everyone believed in him as a two-way player, but he certainly did, and he was very, very right. That I think really limited the options as to where he was going to go. But as far as talent, I mean, obviously there's one major difference with Ohtani being a two-way player. But just as a pitcher, I think the upside is pretty comparable. You're talking about two guys who have frontline starter type stuff, dominated in Japan. Certainly some durability concerns there with Sasaki, but I think if everything clicks, he has a chance to be a true ace, a true number one starter. Does that happen, right away? Maybe. I think he's good enough where that might happen, but again, he's also still 23 years old, right? He's the same age as other guys who are going to be in our top 100 who are in double A or triple A. So it might not happen right away, but it also wouldn't surprise me if you just came out and had a Paul Skeens type year either.
It it strikes me that when we talk now about Sasaki and the durability issues, and it's kind of easy to forget that Ohtani faced a lot of those kind of coming out of Japan. There was the reports at that time that, oh, you know, they found like that there was a little bit of a concern in the elbow, which obviously he ended up going on to having to have Tommy John surgery since then, as we all know. And so at the time, there was this kind of question of, okay, well, how will Ohtani's durability be when he comes over to the U.S.? And he has had injury issues, but obviously whenever he's been healthy, he's also been a dominating pitcher. And, you know, the part that we, you know, that we say here is very different is Sasaki doesn't have a 50-50 type offensive potential to fall back on. But I do think when you look at it, and Kyle Glazer wrote a piece for us at baseballamerica.com that lays this out pretty well. If you just talk about their pure stuff coming out of Japan, there are probably more similarities than differences. The one thing I would say, if I'm going to kind of make a little bit of a point for Sasaki here, I think he's a little bit less of a finished product than Ohtani was when Ohtani came over. There was obviously the two-way status there, but I do think that Sasaki at his best, when we've seen Sasaki at his best in Japan, I think his best is actually a little bit better than Ohtani. I could not be more excited about the possibility of what Roki Sasaki could become, because when you've seen him at his best, 100-mile-an-hour fastball, utterly unhittable splitter, slider that's a usable pitch, and by the way, at that point, you're never looking for it. If he just adds a little bit, if he takes another, like, look at what Paul Skenes did last year, where Paul Skenes was already an exceptional pitching prospect, and then he's like, hey, I'm going to add a new pitch, and it's just going to further transform our repertoire. I think Sasaki kind of has that potential going for him going forward as well. And I do think that this one is a frustrating one for a lot of fans. Obviously, then the Dodgers kind of just added a little gravy by signing Tanner Scott. But in the case of Sasaki, it wasn't that they had more money. It wasn't that they could spend more. It was just that they won a beauty pageant, because this is a player who could choose wherever he wanted to go. And it does add further to the Dodgers kind of becoming Japan East, I guess you would say. Yeah. And if you're going to be the landing spot for most Japanese stars, that's going to put you in a very good situation, because we obviously do now see a lot of stars coming over from Japan.
Wait, the rich can also get richer in this case, JJ. We might see the Dodgers land themselves a nice shiny draft pick if Roki does what he's expected to do in his rookie season, right?
Yeah, that's kind of the another piece I think is understandably hard for a lot of people to swallow, which is because Sasaki came over not as a foreign professional, but subject to the international, I say amateur, although obviously he's not an amateur, but the international signing system. It also means that he's PPI eligible. He's prospect performance incentive pick eligible. How do you win one of those? You win rookie of the year, or you finish top three in MVP or Cy Young. Let's be honest. If you're a pitcher, you're going to finish Cy Young top three. Can't imagine you finishing top three in MVP and not Cy Young. But if he does rookie of the year this upcoming year, or Cy Young any of those years, top three in Cy Young, any of those years before he's arbitration eligible, that would earn the Dodgers a pick if, and the key if here is, if he appears on two of three top 100 prospect lists. Ours is one. I can tell you that's one check mark. He's going to be on our top 100, very high on it when we roll it out on Wednesday. If he's on the ESPN list or the MLB.com list as well, he's PPI eligible. And so then it's just a matter of, can he win rookie of the year or finish top three in Cy Young any of the next several years, which I'm not going to say it's likely, but I do think it's very, very possible, which would net the Dodgers a pick basically at the back of the first round, which probably would not be that far away from where they're going to be picking with their regular pick if they have it, if they haven't given it away by losing it in a free agent signing.
Yeah, I like the PPI rules in general, right? We want to incentivize teams to put their best players on the field. We don't want to see the Cubs hold Chris Bryant down in AAA for a week and a half or whatever it is. These cases where teams have been holding players down in the minor leagues, let's get them up as soon as possible and not pretend like they're in the minor leagues in a lot of cases for any reason other than service time manipulation. So I like the rule, but the idea of the Dodgers getting a draft pick here really feels like it's against the spirit of the rules. I don't think this is what MLB had in mind when they created these rules to try to incentivize bringing you know, your prospects up to the minor leagues earlier. You know, it's not like the Dodgers are doing anything wrong, obviously. If that's the way the rules are written, that's the way the rules are written. But I don't know, maybe next time in the CBA, there could be some exception here. I don't know if MLB wants to do that, but it does kind of show somewhat of the ridiculousness of putting, you know, a 23-year-old professional pitcher as accomplished as Sasaki is into an amateur signing system right now.
Yeah, it's complicated because it's not a perfect world, and we had a problem that we had to solve. And it was a big problem in our sport at one point in the not so distant past, right, Ben, where we looked at prospects that were ready to go, or many thought were ready to go, and they would be held back based on service time until they hit what the clock needed them to hit. Often that was the case where you were holding back a player and you'd get a full extra year if you waited a few weeks. Chris Bryant was the prime example of that, but there were many other cases. It was speculation. It was just bad ethics, right? It was a bad look for the sport when we want the top talent to be in Major League Baseball, especially when there is a lane for those players. With that being said, I'm with you here. It does seem weird and somewhat unfair, but my counter to that is, how would we fix it? Would we say that international prospects don't apply to this, or of a certain age, or does that get pretty complicated? I think it does. The problem is, you know, which was the problem in this whole discussion in general, JJ, Roky Sasaki was bunched together with, you know, a player from the Dominican Republic, Venezuela, et cetera, who's 16 years old. It's two completely different players, and we should try to kind of separate them in these cases.
And I think Carter Stewart may play a role in this in some way, or the idea of Carter Stewart's as well. Because if you go back right before Ohtani signed, not long before that CBA, the rule was 23 years old and 5 years, which was a kind of lower bar to clear, one that Sasaki would have cleared, one that Shohei Ohtani would have cleared. And they bumped that up. And if you say, well, why did they bump that up? I think the biggest thing is, it did make the loophole for, if you wanted to, like Carter Stewart did, first round pick of the Braves who didn't sign, who went to Japan. If you want to do that and in run your way around the draft, you have to stay in Japan or Korea or Cuba for 7 years and turn 25 years old. Carter Stewart's going to meet those standards pretty soon, but it did kind of close that door, but in doing so, it opened up this other door and this other complication that does make for this weird scenario where the Dodgers getting a well below market deal for one of the best young pitchers in the world also could get them a pick for their acumen of signing a below market deal to one of the best young pitching prospects in the world.
Yeah. Hey, you can't solve every problem, and you have to keep innovating and evolving with the rules here. So let's get to our guest, because he's ready to go. Coby Mayo in the Orioles organization, of course, made his debut late last season as well. Coby, great to have you on. Thanks for joining the show. How's the offseason going for you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Offseason's been good. Just kind of like same every year, getting ready for another big year. I feel like every year I'm always saying that this is the biggest year coming up. Because it is, every year feels like it's bigger and bigger. But yeah, feel good. You know, getting ready to leave here in the next 2 weeks. And yeah.
I was going to say, Coby, but it does feel like this year is the biggest year. Every year is bigger because the goal obviously all along was to be making a big league impact. And when you're, you know, when you're coming out of high school, that's like still a few years away. You've gotten that taste now. What did you take out of that exposure to the big leagues that should help you in 2025 to kind of take another step forward?
I mean, yeah, you said it. I think at every level, it kind of takes a little bit of learning to do, a little bit of struggling. And, you know, sometimes that's what you need to get humbled a little bit. I think at each level, I struggled to start. And it's kind of like learning from your mistakes and learning from what they're doing to get you out and kind of combating that with making some adjustments. And, you know, I don't think I know that this year will, you'll see some changes for sure. Just in approach adjustments, just, you know, taking what they give me and not trying to, you know, give into them, because I mean, the game's hard enough. The big league is hard enough. You don't want to, you know, give them any free passes, just like they don't want to give you any free passes. So, you know, working some things in the offseason, hopefully that you'll see this season, it'll be, you know, different.
Kobe talked about some of the adjustments that you're working on right now in the offseason, but take me back to when you signed out of high school. I mean, you always had huge power, being 6'5", strong, a lot of bat speed. What were some of the adjustments that you had to make at that time as a hitter, especially in the lower levels, coming into pro ball in your early years in the system, that really helped you unlock a new level?
Yeah, I think the Orioles, they did a really good job when I first got to instructs my first year, trying to kind of figure out who I was as a person, as a player. Like you said, 18 years old, you're super young. And my first instructs, really hadn't played baseball in a few months due to COVID. And, you know, getting in there for 5 weeks with those guys and trying to get everything out of me that I had. The hitting guys were really good, infield guys. And, you know, the Orioles have built a really good camaraderie around them with, you know, prospects coming up, and they're super close, a tight-knit group. And as you can see in the big leagues, like, I feel like a lot of the guys are clicking. The core is young. And, you know, like you said, throughout the minor leagues, you have to make some adjustments. And I think one thing that they've told me that helped me a lot was, you know, for me, it's not beneficial, you know, putting the ball on the ground. So if, you know, you're going to miss, let's miss in the air. So we kind of always stuck by that. And I think over the years, the power numbers have gotten better. The ground ball rate's gone down, which is, of course, in my best benefit to do. So, you know, you have to make adjustments every year. You're never going to be satisfied with where you're at, even after a great year. Someone's always out to get you, and you kind of always just have to have that, you know, fire under you that, you know, you want to get better and better.
When spring training arrives, major league teams know that they have to have depth. They have to have contingency plans. No major league team goes into the season planning to have five starters make all the starts. Being prepared for life and life's events is even more important, which is why I have life insurance through SelectQuote to protect my family's financial future. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience, helping over 2 million customers, including me, find over $700 billion in coverage since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal, one-size-fits-all policies that cost you more and cover you less. While SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and to be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work with carriers that can give you the same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to SelectQuote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote. They shop, you save. Get the right life insurance for you for less at SelectQuote.com/BA. Go to SelectQuote.com/BA today to get started. That's SelectQuote.com/BA.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
So, Kobe, your organization loves you, but many others do too. Do you take pride or are pleased to hear that other teams ask about you very often in trades? I've talked to other teams and execs, and I've read about it as well, where they're like, oh, they're always asking for Kobe Mayo, and the Orioles hang up the phone.
Yeah, I think it's all part of the business. Like, you see all these other sports, guys will be with their teams for, you know, 10 plus years, and they'll get traded, and, you know, it is what it is. I think it's always nice to see when teams want you, because, I mean, that's just proved that you've done enough that people have interest. But at the same time, like, you have to be where your feet are at, and, you know, kind of just stay in the moment, and, you know, whatever happens, happens.
Kobe, you've played third base for a long time. You got a cannon of an arm. But like, you've also now started playing a little bit of first base. And I think fans a lot of times think, oh, first base, I mean, that's just so easy. You know, you could just slide anyone over to first base, give them the mitt, and the next day they're ready to go. It's actually, there's a lot to it, obviously. Like, how is that transition of adding that position kind of to the toolbox? Is it something where you're comfortable over there yet? Or is it something where, no, third base just feels a little bit more comfortable because you have a lot more reps there so far?
Right. I mean, I definitely feel more comfortable at third. I mean, through the course of my minor league career, I've spent majority of my play at third base. I have played first base through the minor leagues a touch, the big leagues a little bit too. But I think, like, you know, you're playing a corner position. It's not like you're going from third base to catcher. Like, it's not a huge adjustment, but at the same time, like, if you're in the big leagues, you need to be able to master the position because, you know, first base, it's a really important position, a lot more important than people may give it credit for. You know, it's just something that, you know, the infield coaches are out with me every day practicing first base if I'm playing that day or, you know, possibly a game throughout the week. But you always want to give it, you know, you always want to feel 100% confident in that position. And, you know, I've gotten a lot better and more confident in that position due to, you know, coaches helping me out and some early work ground balls and whatnot.
The Orioles have had a lot of success drafting and developing young hitters. And you were talking earlier about some of the adjustments they helped you make to elevate the ball more consistently. What are some of the specific points of emphasis or principles that the organization has really hammered home for you in terms of what they value and what they want to see from you as a hitter?
Yeah, I think if you look at 2023, I was able to have such a successful year due to a few things: handling pitches in the zone and, you know, hitting them for damage is what we call power, slug. And then I was able to control the strike zone really well, wasn't striking out a lot and was drawing a lot of walks. So if you're able to do that, you know, shrink the zone a little bit. Everyone's different. Like, you have to know yourself. So for instance, Enrique is not going to be able to do as much damage as me, but I'm not going to have the hit tool and speed that he has. So you kind of have to give and take a little bit. You know, I'm going to sometimes hit pitches that are, you know, balls for damage. So, you know, you have to handle pitches in the zone. You'll get away with a little bit more because you're probably swing and miss a little bit more than an Enrique player will. But they've hammered home, like, really knowing who you are as a player. And for me, I know I have to shrink the zone a little bit because I'll probably get pitched a little different than most.
And just for any fans that don't know the O's system as well, Enrique Bradfield, also a big-time prospect, teammate of Kobe's in the organization. Okay, Kobe, next one. I wanted to know your thoughts on the little Christmas present you got from the Orioles organization to you and all of the other right-handed hitters specifically. Did you see that news about the dimensions getting a little tweak?
Yeah. Let's just say it was far. The original reconstruction was far. The left field was, you know, I didn't have to deal with it as much as other guys on the team because I was only up for a little bit of time. But when playing out there, hitting some BP, it didn't seem like the ball was flying as much as it should.
Kobe, I also just wanted to ask, because you spent most of last year at AAA, but you also came up to the majors. We hear a lot now about just how the jump from AA to AAA, you know, is a big jump. The jump from high A to AA is a really big jump. But that jump from AAA to the majors is just the hardest. There's just no way to replicate it now. You throw in, you know, you've also got robo, you know, challenges and all that. How big is that jump from AAA to the majors? Does it feel like a slight difference, or does it feel like, no, this is a giant leap of a difference of level?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a big difference. It's a big jump. And I'd say one of the biggest factors and reasoning why it is so big is because you do have little room for you have little room for error, especially coming up like last year when I did in a pennant race. You know, you're trying to win every game. You know, there's, like I said, there's a little room for mistakes. So, you know, if you're in a, you know, one, like, I think I started off AAA when I first got called up in 23, like hitting 180 through like the first month, but I was able to play every day and kind of get out of it. And I ended up my next, I don't know, 60 at bats hitting 330. But you don't get that, you know, the leniency in AAA or in the big leagues that you do in AAA to kind of just get out of it and not have any repercussions. So it is a big adjustment. Pitchers are really good. There's no level past the big leagues. Like, that's it. Like, that's as good as it gets.
Oh, Kobe, we're excited to see you in Sarasota at camp. It's almost time. So thank you for joining us. Great to talk to you on here for the first time. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Thank you. Kobe Mayo joining us on Hot Sheet. Really excited, obviously, to see what he brings to the table in spring training for the Orioles. We've been talking about him for a while. Got a cup of coffee in the majors late last season. Ben, great to have you on. We're going to do a little shift change.
Definitely. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Jeff Ponce entering the mix in just a second. But first, we'll tee up the final sprint. All right. Here we go. Jeff Ponce now joining the picture. I mean, everyone wants to know what the top 100 looks like. It's one of the biggest days of the year, guys. You know that. So, Jeff, what are your thoughts going into this top 100 reveal on Wednesday? And JJ wants to pick me off here before we get to you.
I was going to set it up this way. We'll give a little sneak peek here. Okay. Number one is going to be one of two players. Jeff, make the case for Roman Anthony.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, to answer Scott's question first, I think the big thing and big difference in terms of my first three, I guess, four top preseason top 100s that I've done versus this year is just the depth in the top 100 and the talent up the top is good, but not in the same tier as like the Bobby Witt, Adley, you know, Rushman, Julio Rodriguez years. Now the two names we're kind of looking at here are Roman Anthony and then another guy that you talked about earlier in the show. I think when you're looking at, you know, the difference between a pitcher versus a hitter at number one, the track record is just a lot better for us in terms of projecting those sort of top of the list hitters to, you know, settle in the major league level. A lot of those guys typically in that 1 through 10 area are consistent all-star level players. I mean, I was looking at our 2016 list, I think earlier today, and like that entire top 10 is really good. It's a lot of hitters that were really good. And I think, you know, when you look at Anthony, young for the level, production has been really, really good in the upper minors at a young age, really advanced bat to ball skills, plate discipline, and outlier. He might have better plate skills than James Wood, has similar power to James Wood. I don't think he's necessarily the athlete James Wood is, but still enough of an athlete to profile in a corner outfield spot. Big left-handed power doesn't grow on trees, especially with plus hitting ability. And for me, that sort of puts Anthony into a tier of his own that I think he's going to hit for a high average. He's going to get on base at a high rate. He can run a little bit, and there's 30 homer power in this bat if he continues to optimize his ball flight. Mm.
It's a strong case for Anthony. It is. And he is a hitter. Pitchers are always scary. If I'm going to make the case for Roki Sasaki at number one and acknowledge that Roki Sasaki could go to spring training and, you know, grab his elbow, and all of a sudden we'll see him sometime in 2026. I mean, that's the nature, unfortunately, of pitching. But at the same time, the reason that Roki Sasaki could be number one in our top 100 is we don't see players like this very often. We don't see pitchers like this very often who are as this well-rounded at this age. In the case of Roki Sasaki, I would say even like we've compared him to Paul Skenes last year. In hindsight, maybe Paul Skenes should have been our number one last year. We were scared of it in part because of the pitcher, but in part because some of those steps forward he made, we didn't really get to see until 2025. He added pitches. He improved his repertoire, and that's kind of another part of pitching. In the case of Sasaki, we have a guy here who has two basically near top of scale pitches at his best, fastball and a splitter. He has a slider that I think Jeff and I both agree, you know, could probably improve. It's already reasonably effective. He knows how to pitch. And it's really not a finished product, but it's a product that at this age could be really effective, even if he's not a fully finished product yet. But I think the key thing is now he's going to the Dodgers, so you could argue he's going to be their number four, their number five starter. But in reality, this is a front of the rotation starter who maybe we didn't see it always in 2024. But if you look at 2022, 2023, when healthy, we've seen that from Roky Sasaki, that he has front of the rotation stuff. We saw it in the World Baseball Classic as well. Jeff was fortunate enough to see that in person as well. This is a guy who is special for a pitching prospect. This is going to be kind of a year of the pitcher for our top 100. Part of that is that a lot of those position player prospects have graduated. There's not as many of those at the upper levels, but it is kind of a, it makes for a fascinating debate. I didn't know that we were going to have another pitcher make that case for number one anytime. We kind of wrote that a couple of years ago. When will the next number one pitcher and prospect happen? Well, maybe it could be this year.
I like it. All right. And we'll find out very soon. So let's do one question before we jump, as we always encourage that during this show, which is live. D-Rod said many have equated the NPB out in Japan with AAA baseball. Would that make Roky Sasaki the equivalent of a very good prospect? JJ, your thoughts first.
So this is one of those things that's always tricky, because like, what level would you put the World Baseball Classic at, right? Like, if you said the World Baseball Classic, on some days it's a level beyond the majors, and on other days it was a level probably below AA. I would say that with the MPB, the best players in the MPB are every bit as good as the best players in the major leagues. We see this kind of time and time again, where we've seen guys come over and star. Ichiro Suzuki is about to hear his name called. You know, we'll see if it's unanimous for the Hall of Fame. He was a above big league. He was a Hall of Fame caliber player in the MPB. But what you also could say is the level of talent isn't as consistent in the MPB. The best players are major league quality, but I think you could also say that the depth of that talent is a little bit less. So it's not a perfect analogy. I would say it's definitely above AAA. We know this partly because we do see guys from AAA veterans go over to the MPB. But some of those then find another gear, and they come back and they have success in the big leagues as well. So I'd say it's between AAA and the majors, but at the same time, just understand that you could see a matchup at any moment that's basically better than you'll see any matchup in the major leagues that night. What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, and I think there's some elements of it too when you look at sort of the style of Japanese baseball. Sort of the focus on skill development over there from a very young age. They're very good contact hitters overall, probably better than a lot of American contact hitters. So you may be trading a little bit of power, but a lot of those guys make for very difficult outs. I mean, there were guys in those World Baseball Classic lineups that probably would be fringe major leaguers for Japan, sort of at the bottom of the lineup, that are still guys that can get on base, grind out at bats against major league quality pitching. I look at the pitching development of Japan, it's been excellent. And right now, I mean, the best player in the world is Japanese. Our college freshman of the year is Japanese. They're the world champions in terms of the WBC. You know, the top pitching prospect in the world is Japanese. I mean, there's not much that you can knock on Japanese baseball right now. It's on America to maybe step it up a little bit. I'm just saying.
Yeah, we're seeing a ton of stars flood the sport right now from Japan. It is awesome. I was actually just in Japan, and I mean, it is their football. Straight up, you ask anybody if they're into sports, they say yes. The next thing is, let's talk baseball. So that was really cool for me. I was like, damn, this feels like, what, the 70s or 80s, something like that. Maybe a portion of the 90s in our world in the USA. So. All right. Well, hope everyone enjoyed this one. Thanks to Kobe Mayo for joining us from the Orioles, and look out for that top 100 list, including who is number one. Let us know your thoughts on who you think should be number one. If you're watching this after the fact or listening to it later on, let us know by leaving a rating and review. Thanks for watching Hot Sheet. We're back every other week until spring training, then back to our weekly format. See you then.
What is Dax? Are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen. Yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for.
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge. Trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.